Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, one-on-one with the great Jesse Waters. First, Geico. Geico, do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. And then there's your insurance, like your automotive policy. Why don't you bundle it up? Take your homeowner's or your renter's insurance and get your bundle going with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's and renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because they already have so much to do around your home. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save at geico.com.
It's time for Nicaraguan Name That Movie with Adam's buddy Oswaldo. See if you can guess which movie this famous line is from.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left.
If you said Oliver Stone's JFK.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left.
You're correct. Now, back to the show.
Jesse Waters has joined us. He has a new book out called How I Saved the World. It's available now on Amazon. Debuted at number one, New York Times nonfiction bestseller list. Also, many jobs on Fox, Waters World, Saturdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, and then also The Five, and so much more. You can, you can send him a tweet at Jesse B. Waters. Good to see you again, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Adam.
I've noticed, I think, through listening to you doing a lot of interviews and doing a lot of on-air stuff, I feel like you're getting funnier as as you grow older. Now, I know you always did comedy or always pursued it and doing all the hits on O'Reilly and everything like that, but seem to have refined it a little bit better or come into your own or found the point of view or something, because you're really consistently funny when I'm catching you on these radio spots,
well,
especially.
Thank you so much. And I was never funny with O'Reilly. He actually had to have a producer make me funny. So when we would do these Waters World packages, we would insert movie clips because I wasn't funny enough. So if you're familiar with the Waters World street interviews, we'd always have a movie clip that we'd throw in there. And I think we could probably sink News Corp if we're ever sued by all of these Hollywood studios, because I think we used a lot of those clips illegally.
So you and I think share something in common, which is we have very liberal moms.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whose mom is more liberal, your mom or my mom, but maybe we should try to get to the bottom of it.
Well, I just heard what your mother's major was. And I think just that alone was a Chicano studies.
Chicano studies. Now, keep in mind, my mom looks like Tom Petty's albino sister.
Okay.
So if it'd be one thing if she had a little Latin flavor working for her.
No. Latin flavor. Yeah. No. My mom actually told me I was part Native American growing up because she was very tan.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we had our DNA test done for The Five, I am 99.9% European, 0.1% sub-Saharan African.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually more black than Liz Warren is Native American. But that was when some folklore in my family. But my mom was an English major, so I think you have me beat in terms of the academics.
Yeah, now, I was talking at the beginning of the show how Pop Warner football, Pee Wee football saved my life, and I was so important to me, and my son, who's now 15, has no interest in it whatsoever at all. So then you try to figure out, like, how does it work with the parent and the child? Are you pushing against your mom and her influence on you? Many people just echo the same sentiments of their parents, you know, politically or spiritually or beyond. Others, you know, you hear the Mormon kid who is now got all the aggressive piercings and tattoos and is filming themselves and putting them up on TikTok doing a bunch of shit that would piss their parents off. Like, do you feel like you are pushing against your parents or your structure? Or for me, I was just looking at them going, this doesn't work. Whatever you're doing is not working. I'm thinking about a different mindset.
Part of it was rebellion against my parents. And I just remember being drunk one night in college and woke up, and C-SPAN happened to be on the TV. And I started thinking to myself, well, the Republican senators are pretty much saying exactly what the founders had said: limited government, personal responsibility. And then the next day I listened to Rush Limbaugh, and that was it. I became a Rush baby and would make my parents listen to Limbaugh on long car rides at age 17, 18, 19, just like that. And it drove my parents crazy. Like, it literally drove my mom crazy. I think one time she rear-ended a car nearly during a welfare reform monologue. And I thought to myself, well, if Limbaugh is making my mom this nuts, he must be doing something right. And that's kind of what got me into it.
Now, how does your dad land in all this?
Well, my dad is more of a what you consider moderate Democrat. Mm-hmm. But my mother was radicalized once Trump became president and joined the resistance and then dragged my father to the Women's March and made him take pictures of her. And
this is I always laugh because I interviewed James Brolin once. I'll make it fast because people have heard the story. But James Brolin is married to Barbara Streisand, and they live in Malibu. And James Brolin showed up to this studio in his Ford Raptor, which is essentially a desert trophy truck, you know, street legal trophy truck. And he made sure to point out to me that he got the year, the previous year, because that had the V8 in it. He didn't want the V6 turbo in it. And I thought, man, if Barbara Streisand can't get her husband over to the Green New Deal, like, he's doing donuts in a parking lot somewhere right now in his Raptor. Like, right. If she can't get him, how's this even going to work? And it's also a crazy dynamic. Like, I don't know if they argue about it. I don't know if he leaves in a Prius and then parks it by the side of the road and climbs into the Raptor. I don't know how it works, but how does it work with your parents?
Well, so they're both on the left, so that's that. But then when I enter the picture, I have cleared out the Thanksgiving table on a number of occasions. During the Obama years, it was rough. Sometimes I was just the last one at the dinner table, just there with my drink. Everybody had left because, you know, after a few cocktails, you get a little sensitive. And it was like that during the Iraq War, the Obama administration, and it's my sister is also a lib, and her husband worked for Barack Obama and now currently works for Joe Biden. So I've found it better just to not talk about it, because the minute they bring it up, I kind of get my back up against the wall and I feel responsible for defending everything on the conservative playing field. And sometimes I fly off the handle.
What did you so where did you grow up, and what did you think the plan was when you were, I don't know, in the ninth grade?
Well, I grew up in Philly, and, you know, not North Philly, but in a nicer area of Philly. But, you know, diverse neighborhood and, you know, sports town, and played a lot of sports. And in ninth grade, I was just into girls and probably getting high and, you know, just trying to survive high school. And then my father moved us to Long Island, to the north shore of Long Island, which they call the Gold Coast. Mm-hmm. A lot of money. So I had to fit in there. And my dad just wanted me to have a job. And I think my mom just now, even though I have the number one book, she's just happy that I have health insurance.
Yeah,
it's really just, Jesse, don't get fired. Jesse, don't spend any money. Please don't embarrass the family.
Well, you probably could say yes to two out of those three, but the family. Because, you know, I've noticed with the many liberals, and I grew up with this, which is they sort of try to pass them. Now, I'm not, I should say leftist, because I always try to make that distinction. I talk to Dennis Prager about this all the time. Like, I'm starting to notice a chasm between liberal and left. I would consider myself liberal and on many, many subjects, but I don't ever consider myself left because I think they've just gone off the reservation and they would probably not want me to even use that reference anymore. But they do this kind of live and let live and sort of peace and love kind of thing, but most of them are vindictive assholes.
Yes.
I mean, I work in Hollywood. They never stop bitching about McCarthyism. They're all down with canceling everybody who disagrees with any of their many kooky thoughts. They're completely 100% for that. So I your parents are not, they must not be able to lead a normal life.
Well, I don't want to make my mom sound like she's in Antifa. She's not throwing Molotov cocktails at anybody, but she will get hostile. And that's what I've noticed a lot of people when I used to go out on the street. I had to stop doing those man on the street interviews when Trump became president because of the anger. And I would go out there with the Fox News microphone flag and people would just beeline for it and then just call me Hitler and scream Nazi and then interfere with the shoot. So I wasn't even able to film interviews because right. they'd be, you know, grabbing the audio equipment and screaming in the background. And we had to take a little hiatus on that. And now we're starting to bring it back. But as you said, there's so much anger and venom and hostility to a culture that usually brands itself as kumbaya. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, there's a famous image that predates you, but, well, actually probably predates me a little bit too, but you'd be familiar with it. Then, and I bought into this for a long time, which is you have the National Guardsmen in full uniform holding the rifle, and then you have the hippie chick putting the flower into the barrel of the rifle.
That was my mom, by the way.
and that is kind of the image that we all had. Like, one side's got a gun and is militant, and the other side is wearing, you know, a hemp headband that they knitted that day and is placing a daisy of peace, you know, into the barrel of the gun. And I was like, but it turns out the daisy side are the super fucking angry side,
yeah.
Which is also weird sort of empirically. I have many friends that are on the left and many friends that are on the right. I grew up thinking that every Republican, everyone on the right, and every rich person was angry and evil. And what I've noticed from, you know, the aforementioned, you know, Dennis Prager's of the world, these guys are sort of relaxed and jovial, and like have a decent sense of humor and sort of sometimes even a corny sense of humor and like sort of up for a good time. Like, they don't seem pent up and seething and angry. And it's the leftist college professor chicks who seem to be the most angry people on the planet. I don't think it's a coincidence.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and it's an emotional issue that I've found interviewing these people throughout the land, that it's born from hatred. And if you are insecure with yourself, or if your life lacks meaning, you have a lot of hatred. And what the media will do, and people in the left in power, well, they'll kind of mobilize that hatred and turn you into, you could consider it a revolutionary, where everything has to go, right? The founders, they have to go. The statues have to come down. Everyone has to be canceled. And you kind of mobilizing this militant attitude where it's just bent on destruction. And they're not listening. And they're not even debating the substance of it. They're just screaming racist in order to destroy everything in their path.
I am stupefied at how many people just buy into the "we're racist nation." Like, I don't know if they all fear for their jobs. I don't know if they just, their mind has been liquefied by the news, or I don't know, or it's just standard mob mentality or fear. But I've said my entire life that I've had a microphone, we're not a racist nation. Like, why don't, what are you guys doing? Why are we all buying into this theme? And how is it you're helping the people who were racist against, allegedly?
Well, that's the thing. They're not trying to help them at all.
They're hurting them.
They're actually hurting them. You guys just were talking about what's happening in Chicago. It's a bloodbath there, and there's no attempt to rectify any of the violence there. But they've realized now that race is the most potent weapon they have.
Yes.
And it cuts sharply because it's such a horrible thing to be called. It instills fear. So when someone's scared of being called a racist,
right,
they'll freeze and they'll do anything. They'll submit to anything as long as they're not branded racist.
It just dawned on me that leftist politicians have figured out race like shitty restaurants figured out bacon. They're like, nobody likes our salad. Nobody likes our... Right. Start putting bacon on everything.
On everything.
Put it on fucking potatoes. Put it on corn. Put bacon on everything. Yep. And we will have a line going around the block. And yes, the leftists and leftist politicians have figured out that if we just infuse race into everything, then we can win every debate, because we won't even have a debate about the subject we're debating. We'll be debating race.
It's lazy, but it's cheap because it works, and
right,
they don't actually have to dig into the details. And I think this country just has to tell people to knock it off. You're a dad. Just say, sometimes as a father, the most powerful thing is no.
Right.
You don't always have to cave, because the mob, after 48 hours, they'll just move on to a softer spot. That's all they're doing. They're
right,
just looking for soft spots to penetrate and score victories. But if this country just stands up and says, no, we're not going to change the name of the Cleveland Indians. You know, everyone likes the name. We're just not going to change it.
Well, it also... I mean, I've always been saying this, but it's called a progressive movement. It's got the word movement in it. It's got the word progress in it. It's not stopping.
No.
That's the whole thing. The whole deal is we're just going to appease these people. Like, all right, change the name of the Cleveland Indians so we can get on with our lives.
Right.
Oh, you shall not get on with
no,
your life. We're going right on to the next thing, to the point where most of the stuff, if you you used to, in this country, go, if you told our founding fathers this, they'd never believe it. Or if you went back and told my grandfather, when he was still alive, X, Y, and Z, he wouldn't believe the country we're living in. Or if you went back 50 years, and you can go back 26 months in this country's history, go way back to March of 2019. And try to pitch some of the shit that's coming out of AOC's mouth to someone from... 2 years ago, they'd go, this is nonsense. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
We used to, on The Factor at Fox, do these stories, these cultural war stories. And if you were to tell Bill, 10 years ago, they were doing transgender story time to kindergarteners.
Right.
Or they were, the phrase off the reservation could get someone fired.
Right.
As you just said, you would never believe it. But this country has moved so fast, and it's because of social media.
Right.
And social media gets these people on the left believing that everyone's on their side, when it's just a very, very small fraction of the population. But they feed into that echo chamber, and they think, yeah, everyone believes the Earth's going to end in 12 years because of global warming. Everyone is offended by the phrase, you name it. But that's not the case. And the people that are actually least politically correct, they did a study on this, Native Americans, African Americans, and Hispanic Americans. They don't have any use for political correctness. The people that are really obsessed with it are white, atheist, college-educated women.
Well,
that's what it is.
Well, political correctness... the same group who doesn't give a shit about political correctness also has the least gluten allergies, because this is a fucking luxury. It's
right,
a luxury to wring your hands over a baseball team's logo
right,
or mascot. That means you don't have real
their
problems.
Their lives have nothing going on. If really that's the biggest problem in your life, a logo,
right,
then you have nothing going on. And a lot of these people are just bored.
Everything's rushing into my brain at once. First off, I remember watching this 60-minute expose. It's been 10, 13 years or whatever. They were talking about feeding impoverished kids in Africa and the villages. And I'm sure you guys can picture what I'm talking about. Somebody invented a product that would, with all the nutrients that these kids needed. It was called Plumpy Nut. It's a weird name.
Plumpy Nut.
It came in a little Mylar packet or whatever. It was peanut butter, powdered milk, and maybe some sugar. I can't remember. And they'd get it, and, you know, the kids would get all the nutrition. You know, it was a way to bring the village back to life. And the 60 Minutes reporter, like, said to the Plumpy Nut guy, like, you know, the guy was there handing it out, and they were interviewing that guy and everything. And they said to the guy, she said to him, like, because she's from Manhattan and she's white, and she was like, "Well, what about peanut allergies?" And the guy just looked at her and went, like, "Yeah, they don't. We don't have time for that shit here. These people are dying."
You should have Plumpy Nut here, because I went in to grab a bite to eat from your fridge. Adam has no fruit, no vegetables, nothing healthy at all. You have nuts. You have string cheese.
And jerky.
And you have jerky. You might as well just have salt packets outside.
When is Plumpy Nut still around?
I think we
Chris?
Have to get Plumpy Nut get us, in the studio.
See if they can sponsor this segment. So the other thing I was thinking about, which is I'm with you in sort of like, I learned all this from my mom. Like, her thing was just sort of rich people don't pay taxes and somebody should do something about everything. And if you ever asked her, like, what are your plans or what are your solutions? She, my mom, who didn't pay taxes, by the way, of course,
right.
She had a lot of suggestions for the folks who were paying the taxes. But I stumbled upon this thing that I thought was kind of interesting when I was talking to Dr. Drew the other day. Plumpy Nut's still around, by the way, according to Chris. I was talking to Dr. Drew, and we used to watch, when I was young, there was a show called Get Smart. Get Smart was a Mel Brooks show, and I'll think of the other guy. Buck Henry and Mel Brooks, one of the very early shows, starred Don Adams, was a funny, kind of weird sitcom that was on in the 60s, and then it was syndicated and blah, blah, blah. Point is this. It was a fictitious kind of FBI agent who was a screw-up in Don Adams, and he worked for... His organization was called Control. And Control did battle with their foes, who would sort of be the KGB or whatever. But they were called Chaos. And I never thought about it. It was just a joke, their Control and their Chaos and stuff like that. But I was saying to Dr. Drew the other day, I said, I think AOC and Bernie Sanders are Chaos.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what their plan is. I mean, they bloviate a lot, but... Is there tearing down statues is chaos?
It's a continuous revolution, and that's what the Marxists have always promised. So there's never paradise, right? And if you look throughout history, whenever the Marxists have taken control or started a revolution, there's no end game. The end game is always misery. So you caught up in this constant revolution where, as you said, the people that are successful have a lot going on and they just say, okay, we'll give it to you. Okay, just shut up, right?
Right.
And then 10 years later, you've given away half the playing field to these people because they have nothing else to do except trying to destroy happy people.
Right.
Because right now, happy people have a good life, they're happy, they're positive, they're working hard, they're successful, and they're paying taxes. And you're just having to deal with annoying people who are complaining about everything that is wrong with you, about everything that is wrong with the country. So you're having to appease them constantly. And it's just become tedious. And after a while, you have to start standing up and fighting these people and just saying no.
I agree. Chris found that 60 Minutes clip. Wow. What is this? This is over 10 years old now, isn't it?
I mean, it was posted to YouTube in 2012, but I don't know if that's when the air date.
Oh, okay.
2 years ago, this region had the highest malnutrition rate in Niger. But now, after widespread use of Plumpy Nut, it has the lowest. Dr. Shepherd told us they'll be able to treat more than 120,000 kids this year, up from just 10,000 3 years ago.
What about peanut allergies?
We just don't see it.
See kids with peanut allergies?
We don't see children with symptoms of allergy in developing countries.
Yeah,
food allergies.
Because they live in the dirt and they're not being fucking bathed in Purell by their fucking hippie liberal parents all the time, and everything isn't rubbed and scrubbed. We don't see it. And by the way, Anderson Cooper couldn't accept it. He's like, what about peanut allergies? And he's like, nah, we don't see it. no peanut allergy. Like, he was like, he comes, his mom is Gloria Vanderbilt. Right. He grew up in a high rise in Manhattan. Everyone he knew had a peanut allergy.
Every private school in Manhattan has massive amounts of peanut allergies.
Right.
And, you know, these liberals, they want to make sure everybody is worried about global warming. And so now, if you go to some of these Central African nations, they don't care about global warming, Adam. They want running water. They want development. They don't want their limbs hacked off by the marauding tribe that's a few kilometers down the street. If we could just get them some development, some investment, some capital, they might be able to maybe have babies that live longer than 10 years old, and they might be able to put a roof over their head and might have access to advanced medicines.
Well, this is a good segue, because I think people need to understand, like, so bizarre. First off, I always say to Dr. Drew, all roads lead to narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that we can control literally the universe from California, essentially.
Yeah, like right.
Manhattan and Los Angeles can control the entire globe. And so if we make sure that our thermostats never set lower during the summers than 79 right. degrees, then somehow we, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio and his Prius are going to
yes.
fix global warming. Now, my thing is I'm all for the environment. I don't know anybody who isn't. Everyone loves clean water and pristine outdoors, and no one wants to leave a bad globe for their kids and their kids' kids. But I actually heard a study the other day. I'll paraphrase, but it's something like half the greenhouse gases are from 25 cities in the world, and 23 of them are in China.
Sounds about right.
So,
but the
what's that have to do with me living in La Cañada and lowering right. or raising my thermostat? It's this bizarre thing, and it's really the absence of religion. I'm not religious, but nothing has taken its place. These people, religion left and something else took its place, something magical.
So before the Industrial Revolution, you used to have these tribes that would literally worship the sun god. They would do a dance in order for the rain god to bless their crops. And that's where we are now with these modern day environmentalists. They're literally trying to sacrifice comfort in order to appease the environmental god of wisdom. And to think that you, anybody, can control what the temperature of the world is going to be in 100 years is beyond arrogant. So I said this the other day on Fox and just got ridiculed by the left. I said, we're not going to be able to control the environment. We just have to adapt to it, right? So right now, I think the Netherlands, 25% of the Netherlands is literally below sea level. But the Netherlands has learned to adapt to that. They've created reservoirs. They've done a lot of work to make sure that there's no flooding. And they haven't destroyed their economy doing that. So if the sea levels rise 9 inches 100 years from now, you don't think a country that's just blasted Bezos into the atmosphere can deal with 9 inches of sea levels rising? I think we could handle that pretty well.
Well, you know, you used to not be able to live in Arizona, and now you can thrive in Arizona because they have air conditioning.
Air conditioning.
They figured it out. There's another story, which was, I think, a book review in the New York Times about how air conditioning is bad or whatever it is. But again, you start to see, to me, I'm just trying to I'm sort of put the collage together, and I see everything through the eyes of my mom. But it's like, this is the same people. What they do is they talk about how horrible America is over and over and over again. And then they always go, I love this country. I'm just trying to. It's like everything that comes out of your mouth is horrible about this country. Do you love this country or not? I don't think you do, because let's replace the country. Let's just make it your kid. Every single thing you say about your kid is horrible all the time. And then you go, but I love but I love Lil Bradley. He's the best. You know, it's like, you do? Why is everything so horrible?
So, so the air conditioner was invented by a guy named Carrier about 100 years ago, and it was just for making sure the thread counts were fine in the factories, because it got too hot, you couldn't, you know, make textiles. And then they started mass producing it and putting it in offices. And now people who are typing these left-wing blogs from the comfort of their air-conditioned midtown offices are saying we need to get rid of air conditioning because it is contributing to global warming and it is killing us. But actually, it's people that are living without air conditioning that are being feasted upon by pestilence and disease in the subtropics that could use a little air conditioning. And who was the guy that fought Muhammad Ali? I think he was one of the best boxers of all time. He was just on Fox News primetime.
What, Joe Frazier?
Not Joe Frazier.
George Foreman.
Foreman was on.
And to Randall Tex Cobb. No, he never. I don't think he fought Ali. Well, go ahead.
And to your point about your child, he said loving America is like falling in love with your wife. You're not ever going to allow anybody to say anything bad about your wife. You would never say anything horrible about a woman you loved. And you're not going to sit there and let other people just trash the person that you love. And he said that's how he feels about the United States. And he's not going to tolerate anybody trashing the United States because he is in love with the United States. So if you're actually in love with the country, you don't talk about the country like that. They're not actually in love.
Right. Yeah, it'd just be like, oh, listen, my wife Janine is a horrible shrew who can't cook, but she has so much potential. I want that lazy bitch to find her potential.
Yeah, right. My wife is racist, and right. She's a horrible mother.
That's right.
Who spends all of my money. But yeah, she's okay. She could be improved in a few ways.
She oppresses the indigenous people.
Yeah. She beats the maid. She poisons the food. And we have a horrible garden. But she's okay. She's better than China.
It's weird. I don't know. I feel like with the racism thing, I feel like it's like at the end of The Wizard of Oz where someone just has to kill the witch and celebrate. Like, I people need to rise up. People need to say, shut up. Like, not another lecture from Ibram X. Kendi or whoever these fucking idiots. Name is probably Gerald Wilson or something.
Right.
I don't even know. Ibram, it's always comical to me. Ibram X. Kendi's real name?
Can we get birth certificate
so
of that
have
guy?
A fucking laugh. These grifters, they're fucking race baiters, like roll into town, put an X in the middle of their name,
right.
Write a book about toxic racism, and then Ibram Henry Rogers. Oh, so Ibram is good, but Henry Rogers, not X. Ibram. X, what's Kendi? Okay.
Kendi, yeah, that means loved one.
Where's the X come from? Malcolm? We all have to, not Jamal Warner either.
Yeah, he changed his middle name to Zolani, which starts with an X, which is a word for peace.
Oh, we all have to fucking listen to these idiots. It's insane.
Yeah, so if they ever come for me, I'm just going to put an X after Waters, and maybe they'll leave me alone. I do think, though, Adam, eventually the left starts to eat their own, and they'll start coming after people. They came after what's the Bachelor guy, remember?
Yeah.
They came after him. They've come after people before. And once you start knocking down probably the leadership of the Republican Party, or of the Democratic Party, some of their idols, and calling them racist, that's when it stops. Because right now they're on offense, but when it comes around and they start having to play defense with the race stuff, they won't tolerate anymore and they'll shut it down.
It is so insidiously bad to turn a group into victims. It will destroy anyone, micro or macro, who thinks of themselves as a victim shall not flourish. Do you guys know? I mean, we know human beings. I have some family members. They think themselves victims. They are not successful, and they sure as fuck ain't happy. You cannot be successful
right.
and or happy if you think you are a victim. So this notion of converting everyone in society, I mean, gay or lesbian or black or Hispanic or whatever, bi-curious or whatever group you're focusing on this week into a victimized group shall destroy that group.
And that's what critical race theory does. They divide the country into two groups, the victims and the oppressors. And if you are white, you are automatically an oppressor. And if
right.
you are black, you are automatically a victim of that white oppressor. So you remember what you were like in sixth grade. You were probably a mess, just like I was. Couldn't dress, hated your parents, getting into fights at school, hormones raging, terrible situation. You're going to sit down and tell that white kid, not only are you bad because your ancestors enslaved half the country, but you are currently oppressing Jamal, who you're sitting next to in class, and victimizing him, and you need to apologize for that. You need to be ashamed of that. And Jamal, you know, Jeremy, who you're sitting next to, is actively responsible for everything that's bad in the country, everything that's bad that's happened to your family, and you will never be as successful as Jeremy because your skin is black. How poisonous is that to do to a child? And these brains aren't even fully developed. I mean, this is really hardcore Marxist propaganda, and they're doing it on purpose to divide and conquer. And right now, parents are just outraged. They're not going to tolerate this, and it's going to have a huge blowback in these midterms.
Well, I would say we shouldn't tolerate it for the sake of the young black child.
Right.
You're not helping at all.
And the black and Hispanic parents are also outraged by critical race theory because what do they want? They want their kid to get into a great school.
Right.
And they know this has nothing to do with academics. It's not going to improve their SAT scores. This is a class that's separate from history. This isn't just history class. You're learning a new theory. This is taking another hour out of your academic calendar each mm-hmm. day to tell you your child's a victim and black parents aren't going for it.
Chris, what was that article that I was talking to Gina about off the air, I think, which is another one of these race grifters. What's her nose? Was talking about how it's not okay for comedians.
Oh, Robin, the author of White Fragility, Robin
D'Angelo.
D'Angelo, yeah.
By the way, I've never been more disgusted with society, with our society.
Today, as you are today.
In the recent months, like when I see people walking along the beach alone with a mask on, or driving their car with a mask on, or yelling at me for walking alone on a horse trail with no mask, or these grifters hawking their books and it becoming almost curriculum now at Fortune 500 companies, where we're just this crazy bitch shits a book out and every Fortune 500 company grabs the book like it was the Bible 100 years ago yeah. and just enacts all her insane ideas. I had no idea we were this insanely gullible, stupid, weak. Mainly, it's just a character. These are character issues.
Yeah.
No, by the way, none of the people, first off, no one likes Robin DiAngelo. They all are sucking up to her because they're all just scared that they're going to get canceled or whatever it is. But is she explaining? I'll tease
yeah.
this.
Yeah, we should tease it.
She's explaining why.
She's just explaining where comedy lies within racism.
The least funny, most hateful shrew on the planet is going to give us a lecture on mirth. All right, let me hit Candid. They're specialists for everything: mechanics, roofers, plumbers. But when you want to fix your uneven, crooked teeth, well, you see an orthodontist, right? Candid, invisible, comfortable and removable aligners. Unlike poorly reviewed or insanely priced clear aligner companies that use general dentists, Candid only works with orthodontists. So the same experts in tooth movement, these are licensed orthodontists who create and prescribe your plan. And start to finish, and they can monitor you remotely. So you're not working with a general dentist. You're working with an orthodontist who specializes in this. Book an appointment at a Candid studio near you or from the comfort and convenience of your own home. Average treatment is just 6 months and costs thousands less than traditional braces and include free teeth whitening. It's Candid, right, Dawson?
Candid can help you get the straighter, brighter smile you've always wanted. Right now, you can save $75 on your Candid starter kit when you get started from home, or you can book an appointment at a Candid studio near you. Go to CandidCO.com/Adam and use code Adam. That's CandidCO.com/Adam. Code Adam. Take advantage of this limited time offer to save $75 on your starter kit. CandidCO.com/Adam. Code Adam.
Jesse Waters is here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back right after this.
Do you want to be a part of Adam's next book?
Shit, yeah!
Submit your questions for Ask an Asshole by emailing them to askhole@adamcarolla.com. Please include your name, age, and location. Ask about any topic you need the Ace Man's advice or answers on. That's askhole@adamcarolla.com.
Back with Jesse Waters. The book, How I Saved the World, is available now on Amazon and, of course, the show Waters World. As well, Saturdays, 8 Eastern, Fox, 5 o'clock. I see it out here. And the 5, of course, the Robin DiAngelo.
Yeah, so she's out promoting her new book called Nice Racism, How Progressive White People Perpetuate Racial Harm. And which she argues that subtle racism is more insidious than overt racism. And she's talking to a YouTuber.
I wonder if anyone who's ever been lynched historically would share that concept. The subtle stuff is worse than the overt stuff.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's a microaggression, Adam. So I did an interview down at the University of North Carolina on microaggressions because they were fining people and had a list of things you weren't allowed to do at that university. One of the things you're not allowed to do, you're not supposed to invite someone to play golf. Because when you invite someone to play golf with you, that is assuming that they come from a socioeconomic background where they would have the privilege of even taking golf lessons and feeling comfortable at a club. Mm-hmm. So I would go out and I'd say, well, would you like to play golf? And she said, no, I don't want to play golf with you. That's a microaggression.
Mm.
That is, fine. Get someone else in the foursome.
Well, what about inviting someone to a buffet?
I don't know if that's a microaggression.
How about a bouncy castle? Many kids did not have a bouncy castle.
That is okay. That's lower on the socioeconomic ladder than that. Mm-hmm. Also, Merry Christmas is very offensive, and take offense to Merry Christmas.
Sure.
But there are a lot of things that we don't even realize we're being racially hostile about. If you say, where are you from? You say, oh, where are you from?
Right.
That would maybe make someone feel uncomfortable, like, oh, well, I'm not from this country, maybe.
I got to tell you, we are so batshit fucking crazy. Every third Uber driver I've ever gotten around this country, and I've been in the back of a lot of Ubers in a lot of states doing a lot of shows, have some sort of accent or something, and the first thing out of my mouth is, where are you from?
Yeah, where are you from?
And they love telling the story about where they're from.
Yeah.
So it's a conversation.
Right. But they,
by the way, they know they're from somewhere because they have a thick accent. They know they're West Virginia. Really, right. Habib? I can't understand you. Like, it's insane that we're trying to do this. It's also, we're so out of real racism, we're now on to the next chapter, which is, oh, you're racist. You just don't know it because you don't do anything that's racist.
Right.
That's their batshit crazy argument. Like, would that work for arsonists? Oh, no, you're an arsonist. I've never lit a match. Yeah, I know. But see, you don't know.
That's right.
You deny being an arsonist because that's how we know you're an arsonist.
Or, and this is the woman that just talked about this, you have white fragility. Mm-hmm. So if you don't think you have white fragility and you say, I'm not fragile, that right there proves that you are a fragile white person.
We're getting to the point where it's like, look, put the witch in the well. If she sinks to the bottom, she's innocent.
Right. It's a lot more scientific.
It really is. All right. Let's speaking of witches.
Yeah, so this is her talking to YouTuber Joseph Jeff and explaining where comedy belongs in this world of racism.
So comedy is, I think it's an excuse to get to be racist, right? Like irony. And I think TV shows like Family Guy and South Park and maybe a little bit The Simpsons, right, allowed white people to be racist self-consciously, right? Like, I know I'm being racist, and therefore it doesn't count and it's okay. And it's a lot like what I exposed that couple to at dinner. I'm still reinforcing racist tropes, yeah, ideologies, and stories. It's still being reinforced in everybody's mind who's listening. And so I don't think it's benign to do it in a joking way. And there is a concept in comedy called punching up, not down.
All right. Could you imagine having dinner with this witch?
She has a peanut allergy for sure.
Oh my God. You'd be like, pass the salt. Why the salt? I just want some salt. But the pepper? No pepper?
No pepper.
The salt is white. Oh my God. Give me the salt and the pepper. Please don't judge me.
I'll mix them together, asparagus. I promise.
Yeah, in a harmonious fashion.
So she said The Simpsons now gives white people an excuse to be racist.
Of course.
Isn't The Simpsons created by one of the most liberal guys in Hollywood, Matt Groening or whatever his name is?
He doesn't know he's racist.
And, right. And then Apu, didn't Hank Aziz, I don't even remember the guy's name, he stopped being the voice.
Right.
For the...
Hank Azaria.
Hank Azaria. He stopped being the voice for Apu.
Oh, they don't even... They're so far fucking far out of problems. Right. They don't even know what they're talking
about. They thought it
anymore.
Was perpetuating a stereotype.
They're on to the Simpsons.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying. It's laughable.
And that's what I was saying. Once they come for the Simpsons, that's when the left says, hey, you've gone too far.
Here's the other thing. I mean, first off, who anointed this bitch an expert on race? How the fuck does she know anything? My fucking Labrador knows more than this bitch. Number one. Number two, it's why I like carpentry and skills. I'm a carpenter. She can't fucking fake it as a carpenter because she doesn't know the difference between a mortise and a shiplap joint. She doesn't know jack shit. You can't fucking fake a skill. You do TIG welding or MIG welding or whatever it is. You operate a lathe. You either do it or you don't. You can't talk your way around it.
So if we were on Survivor and she was there, she would be useless. She couldn't make a fire. She couldn't make a fishing pole. We would have her off the island immediately.
She wouldn't be voted off. She'd be eaten before the first ceremony.
Right. But so that's how useless she is. But now people that have no skills, no talent, that wouldn't be able to achieve any sort of affluence or success in any other capacity, have found this venue, this
right.
racial industry
yes.
to profit from.
It's great.
And it's now a whole industry.
I know.
What's his name? Who are all these race hustlers? Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton.
Right.
These were the pioneers that just kind of blazed the ground for people like her to just make. She's probably making deep into the six figures as a consultant.
Oh, look, I don't know. I'll paraphrase, but everything starts off as a movement, eventually turns into a business. And then it turns into a grift.
It's like, a grift now.
Now it's a grift.
We're in the grift zone.
We're in the grift part of this.
Yes. Like,
Let's just say Ibram X. Kendi or What's-Her-Nose or Jesse Jackson or whatever. All right. Let's just say, okay, you guys are the anointed CEOs of race. Let's go ahead and just check your stock. Let's just see how the company's been going. Let's just see how you're running this company. So Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, the rest of you fucking hustlers, let's see. Black Lives Matter. Let's check your portfolio. Let's see what you're doing with the company. You're the CEO of black people. How's it going?
So
let's look at a performance.
You've raised $100 million over the course of the last 3 years. Where'd the money go? People hate each other more. There's more racial disharmony. There's more violence in these cities. And I can't see any benefits besides everyone's just mad at each other.
Oh,
you canceled the guy from The Bachelor.
Right.
That's all you got one
Harrison.
Scalp. You got Chris Harrison.
Right.
That's about it.
Right. And he got $20 million yeah. on a wrongful termination.
Yeah, you paid a white guy $20 million to go now live in Malibu for eternity.
That's the best thing that ever happened to him. He was probably sick of that gig anyway, and he got this huge cash buyout at the end. So yeah, there's your scalp.
And then you have Stacey Abrams, who now has a multi-million-dollar real estate portfolio. The two other women behind the Black Lives Matter movement also have real estate throughout the country. They have an island, I think, a little place in an island, all white island, of course.
Oh, again, nothing whiter than Topanga Canyon. Yeah, I mean, if you're from out here,
you know,
if you think, you know, Encino is white, nothing is whiter than Topanga Canyon.
Right.
It is the, she bought a house there, which is fine. I'm just saying that is the whitest 9 mile stretch of highway in Southern California.
If everyone's that's white is racist, why would you choose to go live in the most white area of California?
Why are you throwing your babies over a fence in Mexico into this racist melting pot here, this cauldron of
racism?
Can't
be that bad of a country if everyone in the world wants to come.
Well, they never really think about that. I mean, that is the ultimate. Like, there's if this, in fact, is 1/100th of what these people are talking about, then why are Nigerians trying to come here? And then when they do come here, why are they so wildly successful? If this is, if you forget 20% accurate, your version of this country we're living in, Robin DiAngelo, if it's 1% accurate, your portrayal of this country, how is it that everybody from everywhere that looks different than Jesse and I is literally dying trying to get here?
The idea that we're debating racism, that it is such a luxury that this country is so fixated on something like that, where people, as you said, from Nigeria, they're not worried about racism over there. They're worrying about starvation. They're worrying about hunger. They're worrying about violence. They're worrying about getting sick. They come here. They turn on the TV. People are focused on racism.
It's also,
it's a privilege to have this much focus on racism.
No, it's literally a first world problem.
It is.
We you alluded to it. I don't know what the study is, Chris, but the study came out, I don't know, last week. You know, race relations are like an all-time low. You know, this is 5 years after, you know, having a black president, a two-term black president. Like, They have no, I guess what it, here's the way I feel. I don't know how you feel. I feel that it's insanely irresponsible. I feel that them, CNN, MSNBC, and all these, and even USA Today, LA Times, or New York Times, the constant insanity of their drumbeat of racism, of taking every story and infusing it. And Obama's the worst. He's turning into a race hustler. Him and Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama telling stories about getting froyo with her kids, and a white woman walked in front of them in line because she was invisible. And this is a racist country. It's like, you never had anyone step in front of you in line, like, especially, by the way, I don't even know where the line is anymore. I go to the supermarket and I walk up to the check stand and I have like 80 people go, and I go, what? And there's a big long line of people, but it's not racism.
It's very confusing. And Michelle Obama said for the entire time she was at the White House, she just wants to go back and live a normal life where she can go to the grocery store and be a regular person. So the minute she leaves the White House and is a regular person at the grocery store, someone cuts in line like a regular person, doesn't recognize her, right, and then she complains.
Well, and Obama, I mean, President Obama, okay, so everyone hates me for these opinions. I think these people are getting people killed. I think they're stirring it up and they're turning this into what it shouldn't be. And a lot of the problems on the street you're seeing is a lot of freaked out people thinking we're living in a racist environment. And when what he does, and he's been stirring it up a lot too, is, and he's completely changed his tune. He used to be sort of moderate and be sort of like, look, if I don't get elected, it's not because of the color of my skin, it's because I didn't get the message across. So what he does is he does this thing where he's like, well, we got our own race problems here. We got Ferguson, you know, we got the Ferguson situation. It's like your DOJ dispatched a bunch of lawyers over there and exonerated that cop. That this is not a racist cop shooting. It isn't. You know it. Why do you keep talking about Ferguson as if it was? It's like it's this is upside down world where you decide that the cop who shot the black kid was racist. You do it in the first 10 minutes. And then at some point, all the evidence comes in and that's not how it went down. And then you wait another 10 minutes and go back to your first assumption.
Right. Like, facts don't matter. I'm glad you brought up Ferguson, because they used to pull Gallup. Race relations, how black people view, how white people view. It was always in the high 70s for the last three decades. In 2014, after Ferguson, that is the moment where you see now race relations plummet in this country. And now only about 40 to 35% of people feel like race relations are good. And it's called the Ferguson effect. Remember, right. The police pull back. They're not going to be confrontational. They're not going to be policing aggressively, because why would they? They're going to get
proactively. Right.
They're going to get a viral video that's going to go out. It's not worth it. You see retirements. So then you put in the mindset of the population that white police officers are going out and hunting down black males. And the statistics, it's like you have more of a chance of dying from a bee sting. This is true, than being a black man murdered by a white cop in this country.
Yes.
And that, but if you listen to CNN, it's like a race war.
It's getting people killed.
It is.
It's insane. And you just take Ferguson. I mean, Ferguson is, was it Michael Brown?
Yeah.
I think his name.
That was the hands right. up, don't shoot.
Yeah. So Michael Brown goes into a liquor store, strong arms some guy, threatens him, steals a bunch of Tipperillo cigarettes or something. And then leaves and walks down the middle of the street. Cop tells him, get out of the middle of the street, go use the sidewalk. He doesn't listen to him. Cop backs the car up. He puts his hands on Michael Brown, according to the forensic stuff, reaches in, wrestles with the cop. Cop shoots him dead. Okay. I don't know where race factors in to this thing. This was pretty preventable. Like, he could have just went off to the sidewalk and walked home.
See, you're not even allowed to say that anymore. On Fox, you get into situations where we cover these racial shootings, and if you even say, oh, well, he had some drugs in his system, or if you read off his felony rap sheet, the left will come at you, and they will say, you know, you're besmirching the life of a black man that was murdered by a police officer. You can't even tell the whole story.
Well,
they're like scaring you into silence.
Of course. And then so what happens? Hands up, don't shoot. And the whole town burns down and riots across the country and black-white relations. And CNN fuels all this shit.
Right.
But Obama could have said something, too. And the point is at some point they get Department of Justice and they go down there and they go over every scrap of evidence and they don't come up. They never prosecute the cop. He doesn't get indicted. They find Anthony Brown's like DNA on the cop. He wasn't shot in the back. End of discussion. And so I'm not saying that white cops don't shoot black men. I'm saying Ferguson was not that.
Yeah.
So keep walking. But instead,
no, I know.
We have to grab it, turn it into something, and
well, they're invested at that point.
They're invested they go in something so hard, that didn't happen.
Right. They go in so hard on a lie, and then once the facts come out, they're on to the next hustle. Because the facts always kind of drip out and drip out. You never realize it at the time exactly what happened.
Right.
Because the cloud of war. And it takes patience and it takes attention to facts to find out the truth. But then by that time, 3 months later, there's another African-American that's shot and they go on to that one. And what they have to do is they have to scare the black community into believing that whites want to put them back in chains. Joe Biden actually said that.
Yes.
And then they have to make the white people of this country feel like so guilty about something that maybe their great-great-great-grandfather never even did, you know, wasn't even related to them. So it's white guilt combined with black fear divides the country, so it keeps black Americans voting for Democrats, and it keeps just the right amount of guilty white people voting for Democrats, and that's how you get the coalition in the Democrat Party.
It's just, it's destroying the country. It's getting people killed. It's insane to me. And it is, it's almost, it's like for CNN and I mean, again, MSNBC and every major outlet just about out there, it's like a fiduciary duty that they're not carrying through.
Well, that's, like, I'm glad you said that word, because if you look at the ratings, there's profit in these racial shootings for them. CNN ratings spike. We see the ratings every day. I see them every day. Every time there's a racial controversy, especially involving police, their ratings are huge. I mean, they did, I hate to talk about it like this, but just the George Floyd memorial or that story in general. I mean, you add millions of viewers to CNN when stuff like that happens. So sometimes there's legitimate stories like that to cover, and then sometimes other stories like you mentioned, the Mike Brown situation, where at that point they have to go big with it because they've already juiced their numbers to a certain extent. They have to keep covering it, and they have to just cover the narrative of it, because that's what, it's not news. It's the narrative
right.
of these stories, these racial stories. They have to pursue, and it's for profit. Because
right.
the CNN parent company make a lot of money off of it. What is it, AT&T and CNN? I don't even know anymore. But they make a ton of money. And they make a ton of money off China. That's why they don't want to cover the lab leak theory. A lot of these parent companies from these major news corporations, they have a lot of money in China. They have a lot of money in these racial hoaxes. And that's why you see the coverage the way it is. Because, unfortunately, it's about money.
Yeah, well... It's if it's not about money, then they're just flat out evil. So I
there's
hope
a little bit of that
money.
Too. It's about money and political power.
It is interesting times we're living in, according to maybe an old Chinese proverb. Jesse, I want to plug the book first. I'll do a little spot for a solo stove. So summer, man, time to get outside. Time to light a fire, day or night. Smokeless fire pit from the Solo Stove turns summer moments into unforgettable memories. I have a Solo Stove. It is so good. You know, I like building. I like cars. This thing is stainless steel. This is world-class construction. It is a nice piece. You don't get the fumes. It's a stainless steel construction. It's designed to regulate airflow and burn more efficiently. So little smoke, you'll wonder how there's so much fire, and it's easy to light with just a few bits of starter. Lifetime warranty, 30-day free return policy as well. It's Solo Stove, right, Dawson?
No one needs a reason to gather around the fire. Solo Stove just took away any reason not to, and now you can get $10 off when you use promo code Adam at checkout. Just go to solostove.com. Remember, you get $10 off when you use promo code Adam.
Well, we need more voices like Jesse Waters, because... I found the big problem is people get this stuff foisted on them constantly, and most people just kind of eat it. You know what I mean? Like, you're racist. You just don't know you're racist. Okay, sorry. I just want to raise my kids.
Right.
I'm sorry. Maybe I am. I'll look into it. Like, they don't go, shut the fuck up, you nut. Like,
yeah, I'm racist. I'll look into it.
Yeah.
My bad.
If you want to know,
just let me in.
The point is people have to just step up
yeah.
at this point, because, and I'll tell you why, getting back to Chris Harrison. Has an apology worked for any of these people
no,
ever?
You never can apologize. And he tried to apologize on his own network. And Michael Strahan, fellow ABC colleague, after he did the mea culpa, which was written by lawyers, of course, comes back on set and said, you know, didn't look like he meaned it. Like, what? Like, well, you're supposed to help the guy out. And he just kneecapped his own guy.
Also, it's always so weird. I just saw him interviewing the country guy drop the N-bomb who's drunk in his driveway and his career's been destroyed. But the point is it's also, I never get why they don't think it's weird. Like, hey, Michael, we got Strahan, we got an assignment for you. All right, who said something about black people? I could imagine it'd be the weirdest thing ever if I was like the white guy who just talked to black people. Like, you said honky in a tweet a few years ago. You know how that made me feel?
Yeah.
As a representative of white people.
Yes, yes, speaking on behalf of white people, that was very offensive. And you know how fragile we are.
Well, there's the white fragility. Oh, yeah, Morgan Wallen. That's who it was. All right, the book, How I Saved the World, is available now on Amazon. And, of course, Waters World, Saturdays on Fox. And then The Five, of course, as well. And what else? You can shoot him a tweet at Jesse B. Waters. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Jesse Waters and Bull Bryan, Gina Grant, and Ian Bagg saying mahala.
Follow The Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Catch Gina Grant on the podcast Easy Listening, Bull Bryan on the podcast The Film Vault, the rest of us on The Water Cooler. And get your tickets to see The Ace Man at AdamCarolla.com.
Pluto TV is playing the biggest movies every night this summer for free. Watch hit movies like The Hunger Games, The Matrix, Pain and Gain, G.I. Joe Retaliation, Scary Movie, Runaway Bride, and more all summer long. Check out the biggest stars like The Rock, Keanu Reeves, Jennifer Lawrence, Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and more. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of free TV channels in English and Spanish featuring TV shows, news, sports, comedy, and more, all for free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device, including Android and Apple smartphones. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.